the Cinemaphiles participated in a roundtable Q&A with the stars of Apple TV's Trine, Esther Smith and Rafe Spall. We'd like to thank Apple TV, Ms. Smith, and Mr. Spall for their time.
I'm on the edge of my seat because we're at season 3, episode 6.
Okay.
So right when the whole Beth thing went down. So yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a cliffhanger for like a whole season almost.
Completely.
Yeah. Okay. So I really like that Nikki and Jason are supportive of one another.
Mm-hmm.
They are a solid couple, and they have the same goals, and they're a united front. And I think that really works for the show, because when you're trying to adopt a child, that's difficult enough.
Yeah.
So even though your characters have bumps in the road, they're not like duking out with each other. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel I like that aspect of the show. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it's very real. Mm-hmm. I think that it's quite aspirational, really, is that you want, in your own life to have a relationship like Nikki and Jason, where they face adversity and it may well cause arguments sometimes, but after the arguments, after the disagreements, their relationship deepens.
Mm.
And I think that's really wonderful, beautiful. And they, they seemingly have found the right person. And a really wonderful thing that Nikki says at the end of the first season, she says, even if this doesn't work with getting the kids, you're enough. It's enough, we're enough. And I think that's a really beautiful sentiment. It's something that watching, I think we can all aspire to, I think, is finding that person that sees us, accepts us for who we are. Like all we want to be as humans is be seen. And they really see each other. And I think that they're a great couple and I love them. I really, when we finish a season, I miss them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so No, I think you've said it all. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, Nikki calls Jason Jace. It's the little things like that that really endears the audience to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Did you come up with that or was that written?
Oh my gosh, do you know what? I can't even remember. It feels like something that is so, I think we kind of slightly sometimes get in trouble because I definitely add in more Jaces than are written in the script, just because it feels like such a normal, natural thing to kind of, when someone's like annoying you or as a term of endearment.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely add more in, but I can't remember whether that was originally written.
I think it's a mix of both.
Yeah.
And I think something that has happened during the show for a while is because the whole show is written by one guy, right? It's written by Andy Walton, which is in this day and age really unheard of to have written 28 episodes single-handedly. Mm. It's crazy. He's actually written to our voices as well. So just so it means, so he's written to our specific speech patterns and way of speaking. Mm. There is some room for improvisation, but most of the funny stuff in the show, 99.9% of the good stuff in the show is absolutely been written by him.
Mm-hmm.
But we do add the odd thing every now and again.
Because it was the first three seasons were written by the show's creator,
mm-hmm.
and with the exception of one episode so far, has been directed by, I think, the co-creator?
No, he wasn't the co-creator. Okay. So actually, Jim O'Hanlon directed the first two seasons in their entirety,
mm-hmm.
and then the back four of the second season.
Thank you.
Yeah.
How did that aid both of you in terms of being able to prepare for the roles and be able to bring yourselves as actors into the roles?
By having Jim, do you know what's really lovely about this show now, from the privileged position of doing three seasons of it, is that it feels like it is this family where we kind of return to, and not just in terms of like cast, but crew members and everyone involved in that. Particularly like the mainstay is like someone like Jim O'Hanlon, who's so incredible, and he's such he's such an actor's director. He's so encouraging and listens to your ideas, or kind of will say something which will make you think of something very differently. He's a real, it does feel like it. You have such an ease with the people that you have been creating this thing for like these 3 years with, and a real shorthand. And of course, inevitably, that makes it, there's a really lovely ease on set because of that, because you do just feel comfortable and that makes you feel relaxed, which hopefully makes you then perform better or kind of, yeah. He really allows a lot of...
Yeah, he was around since the beginning, and it's interesting that you called him a co-creator, because he sort of is, you know. The creator of the show is definitely Andy Wharton. It was his, well, actually, a gentleman called Chris Sussman, who was the head of comedy at BBC Studios, who are the production company that are responsible for making the show, even though it's obviously paid for and made by Apple. But the production company, they're a different... It's not the BBC, it's not publicly funded, they are a production company strand of the BBC. There was a guy called Chris Sussman who met this writer called Andy Wharton, who pitched a few things to him, and it came out that Andy himself was adopted. And he was like, what about you write something like that? So it was Chris Sussman's idea. Andy Wharton then went away and wrote it. And again, then Sussman went and pitched a few ideas to Apple and was like, oh, I've got this, because at the time Apple weren't looking for comedy. Apple Europe, a woman called Jay Hunt, she wasn't looking for comedy. But was like, you know, this is a great idea, commissioned it. It was one of Apple Europe's first commissions.
Wow.
And then they hired Jim O'Hanlon after we were cast. So we got cast first and Jim came on board. And so we have a slightly different system in England. We don't have like a showrunner system. but he would be something akin to a showrunner, okay. But also directs the show too. And he's an extremely experienced, brilliant, versatile director who has filled us with a bunch of encouragement, really, and made us feel good and held and secure.
I think he trusts us with our roles within it, and that's so lovely to kind of have that.
Because it can be strange, I guess, if you're on a relatively long-run TV show, you know the characters really well, then you get lots of different directors coming in. I think it's difficult for directors to come in and do that.
Yeah.
And we've managed to have a really nice continuity. And also the beginning four of season three, Elliot Hegarty did a really good job as well.
Mm.
He's also directed like Ted Lasso and things like that, so he's worked for Apple. But he's, Jim's a massive part of the show.
Mm.
You can tell that there's an ease between the entire cast that translates very well on screen.
Mm.
I think it's really important. You want it's got to seem real. People talk a lot about our chemistry, you know, which is integral to the show. It feels real, relaxed, and even though you have some set pieces that may be on paper slightly heightened, they're all rooted in reality. And I think that's really important, because we're dealing with a very sensitive subject matter that we're using levity and comedy in order to, as a sort of conduit, but it's very important that everything feels real, and I think that we've done a pretty good job of that, if I may say so myself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, talking about the ensemble, right? Mm-hmm. So Scott and Karen. So they're not the perfect couple. They're not a perfect match. And I'm, you know, at first I was not generally happy with them being together, but I've kind of grown into that. And how do Jason and Nikki feel about Karen and Scott as a couple? And if the adoption goes through, would they be their godparents?
That's interesting. I think maybe similarly to you, I feel like Nikki definitely had huge reservations about Scott being part of their family. Them as a couple, they somehow work. And I love watching that. I love watching their scenes together. We never get to see that. You like read it on a script and then you just focus on your part of the story, and then it's a real, you know, lovely treat when you're watching it all back and there's this other kind of world going on. I find them heartbreaking, I find them hilarious, and they do really work. And I think the more we go on, I think I like to think that Nikki and Jason perhaps tolerate Scott. They tolerate him.
But also, they, you know, like the end of the second season where they get married, and we see the effort that he's made in creating that beautiful garden party and stuff. You're like, oh, he means well, and he's obviously very vulnerable. Character, That's what I mean. Like like Andy's written his character that could seem a little heightened, but roots him with heart.
Mm.
He's full of heart.
There's always those lovely kind of little bits and pieces, like in series one when Karen's really cold and they're coming out of the tube station and he wraps his scarf around her and you're like, oh, you underneath all this, you care, you love her, and you're just like all of us, perhaps we're all presenting a version of ourselves to protect ourselves.
Mm.
And yeah, I think that's really lovely.
Oh, very cool. Great. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to take it this direction, but I am very curious. In this day and age, with overpopulation, global warming, drought, stuff like that, is their story really important, a really important one to tell, adoption versus having your own children?
Yeah, I think it's representation is incredibly important. I mean, I think that it would be disingenuous to say that that was the objective of that storyline, because it isn't, because these are couple that have tried to conceive naturally, mm-hmm. and they haven't been blessed with that ability. So I can't really talk to the politics of it, but I think in terms of representation, in terms of people that the 1 in 7 people are affected by infertility,
mm-hmm.
That it's really wonderful, again, for people to be seen, for that story to be represented, mm-hmm. Because it is something that touches a lot of people's lives and is a source of great pain to very many folks. So I can say that that's great that we represent that, but the political aspect of it, I can't really talk to, because I think it would be disingenuous.
What's been a real lovely bonus of this show is the amount of people that reach out that are going through it.
Mm-hmm.
They're either going through the process, or they have gone through the process, or they're having fertility struggles. And they, you know, it's like a lovely stream of people constantly getting in touch, just kind of saying that they feel like they feel seen by it, they feel like it's an accurate portrayal of what they have gone through. They see themselves in these two characters. And actually, most importantly, that they don't feel alone mm-hmm. with it. And I think particularly over the last couple of years, going through that during the pandemic, I can't even, you know, imagine what you need, your kind of people, your community around you to support you in that. And then having to do that without that has got to have been incredibly hard. But I think it is what has been interesting about doing the show is that I've learned the process of it is not easy and it's hard, and
mm-hmm.
it's so great to be able to be a source of, I don't know, maybe comfort
mm-hmm.
for people in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things that I admire about the show is that you as a couple are not married.
Mm-hmm.
It's a modern way of telling a couple's story
mm-hmm.
while retaining your individuality as characters.
Mm-hmm.
How did you two, what was your process like at the beginning of this series to bring yourselves together while retaining your own individuality?
Mm. That's such a good question. I don't know. I feel like, so before we got the jobs, we had this chemistry read with each other to see if we had correct chemistry, trying to prove that in front of people that you don't know that you've got chemistry with someone that you don't know that you've got this single chemistry, which is funny. And I think there is, I mean, I think you speak to this really eloquently, that there's this extra thing that when two people are performing, it's not the people, it's the energy in between them. Which I think is so true, and that's what is.
I think
created.
That's what's interesting from an audience's point of view. Is
yeah.
that it's not Esther or I; it's what we create together. And I think that because that's what we respond to, that because that's what's organic, that's what's created, that's what's like, you know, lightning in a bottle, as it were. And so we had to have this chemistry read, because chemistry's there or it's not. It can't be engineered mm. or manufactured. It just happens. Mm. I don't know why, but I know that. The only way that I can play my part towards engendering it is just by keeping up with Esther. And, you know, I just listen to her, I respond to her, she's so alive. And I think that's really all that we can hope for with any kind of performative acting, interpretation, whatever you want to call it, is that it's alive. It just needs to be alive and real.
It's organic.
Organic, yeah. And you know, I think a lot of it doesn't even seem written. It's like, it's why people say some of it improvised, because it just flows so naturally in such a real way and feels very sort of, you know, it, the sort of poetry in the quotidian, to be rather sort of lofty. The, you know, the tiny bits of beauty in the everyday, of which he's very good at picking out and working on, and you know, I think is one of the great merits of the show.
The other thing that I captured in seeing the series is that you both have individual ideals, but like you said, you bring that energy together and they become joint. And I consider your relationship to be the on an equitable level to a traditional marriage. And that's what really impresses me about the flow of the show and your characters in general. You feed off of each other very, very well.
I'm sure, but also it's good to say the families come in all different shapes and sizes. It's not just a nuclear 2.4 married and then kids. It's like these guys weren't able to conceive naturally. They're not married at this point, and they love each other, and families family means many different things. Many different things.
You're talking about authenticity, or we're talking about the two of you in terms of chemistry. I loved the speech that Jason gave about Nikki at the end of season one. It was felt very authentic, where he was saying basically, you know, she brings you know, the best in me. That sort of brought a tear to my eyes. So yeah, it was excellent. Okay, Imelda, who plays Penny, right? When I first saw her on screen, I'm like, oh, she's gonna be bad news. but she's not. She's really supportive, and she's in her their corner. How important is it that Penny is a supportive character for Jason and Nikki? I think it's infinitely important because they're so new to the process, right?
Absolutely. And I feel like they need, particularly in this process, because it's something that has taken them a lot to kind of to have the courage to go, do you know what, yeah, let's go down this route. I think they need as many people on their side. And also people, what I love about Imelda's character in this is that she's not this kind of quote-unquote normal, what you'd expect, social worker. She kind of is, like, play it as it comes, kind of bit by bit, step by step. The first time we meet her, she's holding up like a piece of her clothing because someone's thrown wee on it, and she leaves it outside, and she just kind of bustles in, and I think she plays with these two people particularly well, because I think Nikki and Jason are also two people who, you know, are like maybe square peg round hole people, particularly Nikki, I think, and they're not following a traditional blueprint, what they thought their blueprint was going to be, and I think Penny really speaks to that, and is probably, it's like this voice of like wisdom somehow. He's like a few steps ahead of them in life and kind of.
But also there's no antagonist in the show, which I think is quite refreshing. There's no baddies, there's no like mustache twiddling. They're, you know, everyone's trying to do the right thing. And to have someone of her caliber, of Imelda Staunton's caliber, you know, Oscar nominated, one of our finest actors in the world, and you know, obviously there's a lack of her in season three, but that's because she's now the Queen of England. And we hope if we do more you know, when she's finished her reign, perhaps she'll come back and hang out with the peasants again.
I love that. That's great.
There is some tension obviously between Nikki and Princess. Now, you don't have any kids, right?
No, I don't.
All right. Not being a parent yourself, what do you pull from to come across what was making this so sincere?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think maybe on some aspects, maybe it's, well, I guess there's two camps of this, because maybe it's helpful that I'm not a parent, because Nikki isn't a parent, and then she becomes one quite quickly with someone who's older. So she has not, she doesn't have the experience of knowing this person from day dot. So I think maybe that has probably been a helpful thing, perhaps. What I find completely heartbreaking about the Nikki and Princess thing is Nikki tries so hard, and she's such a good person. She just wants the best, but inevitably you can't control what a person, especially, I think Princess is 10 in this, what a 10-year-old is going to be like, particularly a 10-year-old who's probably got a lot of trauma from whatever they've been through in their life. And Nikki is just so kind of patient with her and so present with her that, yeah, I find it completely heartbreaking. But I also love that. I think it's given Nikki something to, you know, she really wants it, so she's really fighting up against it. Yes,
but also from an outside point of view, like, Esther is as lovely with Eden, who plays Princess, as Nikki is with Princess. Like, Esther's really, you know, kind and gorgeous and lovely with her, so I think that's, you know, it comes naturally to you, I imagine.
I think as well, I think it's really because we have the advantage of, you know, being with these two little kids, like, offset as well. So, you know, and you have a lot of kind of, we have like prep time, and that you do get to bond with them, and then you do get to kind of, yeah, form your own relationships with them. And also we're really lucky because they're both really lovely kids. I think, you know, we've been, yeah, they found two really, really brilliant actors, I think.
Yeah, they're good.
Considering they haven't done it before.
The show has been filled with a lot of very unique moments. One of my favorites is when your university chum is on the rocks in his own relationship. Mm-hmm. There's a scene on the river where his girlfriend's, they left his firm at his girlfriend's, and they finally have to meet nearly halfway between the two residences, and then they end up in the river. Mm-hmm. And to get to the other side of that that scene, you realize the river isn't very deep. Mm-hmm. They could have walked it, and everybody's frightened. Mm-hmm. You all played that off so very well, because contextually, you're relaying emotions at the same time you're saying dialogue, moving, thrashing about. Mm-hmm. How long does it take to prep a scene like that? Mm-hmm. Do you have any fears that something is going to happen, especially with a boat coming down the river at the same time that you're in it?
Yeah, that's interesting you should say that, because originally we were supposed to get in that water as well.
Yeah.
And we didn't, mercifully, even though even though Esther was quite upset that that it got cut, that we were going to jump in.
I was gutted at the time, and then the day.
And on the day,
I
was very pleased we weren't in the water, because that's the canal, you know, that runs that runs straight through like central London, and I remember like them guys being in that water. Which obviously you've got like divers there, you've got people under the water, you've got an underwater cameraman.
So that
you've
water's
got,
tested as well. They like tested that water.
They tested that water for cleanliness, so that, you know, nothing terrible would happen. Yeah. Although, when that whole thing happened, like, they'd been in the water for a while, I remember being like, Esther, aren't you pleased you didn't get in? And I pointed towards the water, and there was just a great big bit of chicken skin. Raw chicken skin.
Jeez.
Like a big raw.
A pigeon carcass,
and there was a pigeon carcass, but the chicken skin was disgusting. Like, why is there raw chicken skin in there? So that was nice, but no, I mean, days like that, that took a lot of planning. But because the writing's so good, the actual acting of it, it takes care of itself. You know, it takes care of itself. It's easy. It's very rare on this show that we get there and do the first rehearsal of a scene and we're like, this isn't working. It's very rare. You know, it all feels very organic, and as soon as we start saying the lines, it just flows really easily.
Yeah.
It's not difficult.
Also, for a scene like that, which perhaps seems maybe quite outlandish as well, like it's quite a set piece, it actually works within that world. Somehow you can believe that would happen.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. Like, it's obviously got the immediate comedic set piece element to it, but there is lots of other emotional levels at play. And we are aware of those when we're doing them. But I'm always struck when I watch it, how many other levels that are there even without us knowing, you know, and I think that's pretty clever.
I'll tell you what the hardest bit for filming that scene was, because when they first go into the water, because once they're kind of in, you kind of have to film everything else before they get completely.
So we could only shoot the first jump in once.
Ophelia
jumping in was fine. It was Ollie jumping in, which was so funny. There was something that he did was just so funny, and just trying not to laugh to like kill the shot with, I found that really, really difficult.
Because we could have ruined it. But also, because it was like November, October in London, which is cold, you know, and then like Ollie was really sort of, didn't want to do it. But then because Ophelia was so sort of like gung-ho about it, he couldn't really moan. Like he had to also like brave it as well, you know what I mean? So like, because she was so and then when, because they're supposed to jump in, and Ophelia like dived in.
She like beautiful.
He dived in and he was like, oh my God, I've got to follow that now as well. The thing that Ollie thought he would like gingerly step in, but then when he saw Ophelia jump in, he was like, oh.